They come and they go. The Obama administration ends in just 15 months. That means it's time to start planning for a presidential transition. North Carolina Congressman Mark Meadows, a member of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, tells me what the thinking is behind a bill to involve career managers more deeply in the transition process.
I think probably the biggest thing is we're known as a nation who has a transition of power between parties that is admired by the rest of the world. However, there's a whole lot from a federal workforce standpoint, from a planning aspect, from knowing what we've been doing and going into a new administration, whether that's of the same party or of a different party, that really needs to have a continuity. And so I think some of the legislation that's being proposed really, in a bipartisan way, goes a little bit further to make sure that that transition period is not only a little longer, but a little bit more in depth, and making sure that something doesn't get lost in the translation. So I think it's just more about proper planning than anything else. I know as members of Congress, when they come, that transition period can be extremely difficult just in finding the bathrooms. Now, obviously, that's not an issue when you're looking at presidential transition, but I think it's just more on a continuity, especially in a day and age of some of the threats that we face internationally, that we need to make sure that we just have a continuity of decision making.
And it sounds like from reading the bill that there's a lot more involvement by the career standing federal workforce as this happens, talking to the people incoming and having some of their outgoing people talk, and everybody's involved.
Well, and I think that that's the important part. Sometimes we diminish the value of those career employees or appointees, and we've diminished the value of their institutional knowledge. And this tries to correct that. It tries to say, okay, let's put some value on what we've done in the past, allow those decisions to certainly be evaluated over a course of time, but not make them just a hard line, on day one, do away with everything the way that we've been doing it and start fresh and anew. I think that this provides a softer landing, but also puts an emphasis on the institutional knowledge that sometimes has been gained over decades and doesn't diminish that.
Does Congress worry that maybe given the tone of politics these days, that some of that could somehow seep down to the career day-to-day level and infect that whole transition process?
Well, there's a possibility of that, but I can tell you, having met with many in our federal workforce, the common theme that I'm seeing is really a desire to serve the public. And I think that gets lost, in the days of headlines of this party fighting with this, and the only thing that makes big headlines are the fights, not the way that we get along. Whether it's at GSA, where a lot of this emphasis would be, or at the IRS or anywhere else, those employees are dedicated to trying to make not only a smooth transition, and the frustration comes is when they start to look at this, is they go much further and say, well, golly, I'm not even being paid attention to. Group is making a huge mistake, and so we're trying to put an emphasis on that to make sure that we tap into their not only knowledge, but their advice going forward.
And what does Congress do for new members that are coming in? And every year there's a few freshmen. What kind of orientation and learning and transition do they go through?
Well, we do get an orientation. Most of it is on ethics, and then you get a big book. But the learning curve is huge. I can tell you that it's one of those things that you can be in office as a member of Congress for over a year before you go, oh, I didn't realize that. And so, a transition really helps a whole lot to have the experience and then hopefully make wise decisions based on people who have come there before instead of trying to create something new and afresh each and every year.
We're speaking with Mark Meadows. He is a representative from North Carolina. And switching gears here a little bit, there's some matters at hand even before the election and the transition for Congress. And now the new deadline looming, now that you're back in town, is December 11th. What does it look like now that might happen between now and December 11th when the CR will run out?
Yeah, we've had meetings, multiple meetings in the last 48 hours, really in terms of trying to make sure that not only our federal workforce, but the American people can depend on a funding level. That, you know, we believe that if you get up to that December 11th deadline and you're talking about a possible government shutdown, that we have failed. And so even some of the most conservative members believe that we need to do something in November, that talking about a government shutdown in December is not only something that we don't believe will happen, but the other part of that is it's not conducive to making good decisions going forward. So there's a real emphasis to really get on this in the month of November, possibly pass something the first part of December, but not work it up to the deadline of December 11th. On a personal note, my son's getting married the following day, and so I plan to make sure that it's taken care of long before December 11th.
Did the congratulations on that one? Did the speaker debate and discussion, which drew out a few days, did that delay things a little bit?
Well, I don't know that it's delayed things. Actually, in ways, it may have helped, because those discussions actually came up as part of our speaker's evaluation, and it's, you know, even though that's not decided and there's still a whole lot to be worked out in terms of details, I can tell you that part of the big policy things that we're talking about is not only debt ceiling but funding the government and how we need to do that 3 months ahead of time. Now, obviously, we can't do that on this particular deadline, but we know when these deadlines are coming up. Let's get them done. Let's, I think we said, go early and be firm in what we're willing to do. And so I think what you'll see out of a new speaker, whether that's Paul Ryan or somebody else, is a much more deliberative process that does things a whole lot earlier, so we're not going from crisis to crisis.
And what do you expect the oversight priorities to be for Congress with respect to the federal government itself, the operations of the government, now that so many of hearings in VA and pretty much is not completely done, but there's a new year coming up and some new priorities?
Yeah, I think we're going to start to try to focus on the things that the federal workforce is doing well. I know we're going out to say, okay, what are some of the examples of where we're excelling there, and then try to duplicate those throughout other federal agencies. So I know tackling some of the big items that really have troubled us for a long time, and I say by troubled us, it's making sure that compensation is fair and commensurate with the merits of good work, making sure that from an oversight standpoint, the things that are identified by our federal workforce gets addressed. And we're making good progress there. I mean, it's a slow process, but I do believe that we're making good progress to start evaluating some of those things. I know for me is looking at the procurement process and making sure that that is done in a fair and open and competitive, efficient way. But my focus is really going to try to do in a bipartisan way, working with our federal workforce to make it a happier, healthier, and more productive place to work, and something that I think 96% of the federal workforce really wants, and so tapping into their expertise to help us to do that.
Now, Representative Ridgel from Virginia has introduced a bill that would really change everything. I just wonder what your handicapping of that bill would be, because it would put the sequestration money back into the operation of the government, both on the DOD and the civilian side, but make reforms to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and try to make those more solvent and get the same savings. This is something that everybody's talked about, but we've never seen any real legislative gambit toward that.
Well, I think all of us, and it's hard because what happens is you know, the way Congress looks at that is two separate pots of money. Actually, the way the American people look at it is one pot of money. It's hardworking American taxpayers' dollars, and how it either gets allocated or not. I'm one that if we looked at real reforms to Medicare and Social Security, save those programs. We're going to have to act on them to save them anyways. And that we can change those numbers dramatically. It allows us to shift the focus and allow for some of the taxpayer dollars to go into the federal workforce. I'm in favor of that. Not necessarily his particular bill. It's probably too comprehensive to make it work. But taking some of those principles and starting to apply those, because if not, it's always going to be at the expense of government. We're going to start to cut like we have in order to supply the needs on Social Security and Medicare. And we've got to tackle the big things. And I believe that in the next 24 months or so, by 2017, a lot of those will be tackled and hopefully make it where we're not making the most difficult decisions like we've been facing over the last year or so.
And closer to the immediate future, the president has said he's going to veto the National Defense Authorization Act, and that's something Congress has spent a long time in crafting. And so what's the fallback position if that happens?
Yeah, I'm hopeful that the president doesn't do that. It's obviously one of those things that we're working on right now. I can tell you that even in a bipartisan mode, because of the issues that the NDAA supports, we're very close to having enough votes to override that veto anyways, and there are a number of people that are working on it. We're trying. In fact, I talked to some of my colleagues that voted against it because they are willing to look at changing their vote in order to make sure that we can address that. So I'm hopeful that that doesn't happen. But in the process, we are looking at either having enough votes to override the veto, or perhaps making a few modifications here or there to pick up enough votes to do that.
Because the issue was the overseas contingency operations funds, and now that we're going to have troops in Afghanistan for at least a year longer than thought, maybe that kind of revives the idea of the OCO, maybe for different purposes, though.
Well, it does, and there were a lot of people who felt like we needed to go ahead and increase the baseline for defense instead of doing it through OCO or the Overseas Contingency Operation Fund. But in doing that, that's more a philosophical budgeting decision. Some of our military folks would prefer to see just the baseline budget increase versus OCO. But with where we're going to be in Afghanistan and potentially other areas, I think it will at least meet the needs. And really, this narrative is not as much about OCO as it is about looking at increasing non-defense discretionary spending with sequester caps. So it's part of a bigger narrative that's being argued out in the NDAA.